one on Thursdays. I missed your show today. My apologies. I would have liked to have heard it. You do raise issues around that are of public importance, and I know that you don't really go into great detail and do a lot of public, apologetics or pleading for your own case, but you talk about community spaces that everyone should have access to in these places. You talk about the town square. You talk about the importance of police reports that are accurate. And I guess, I'm trying to find a way so that the average listener can understand without, of course, you got to see this police report and have some sort of familiarity with the history of this case to understand really the enormity of what's going on here. Can you kind of cast some light on that?
Well, I'm real good friends with Kay Wells, who's a longtime attorney for activists in this community. And Kate has had an opportunity to read this report from stem to stern. She doesn't even understand what it's all about. So, I'm not sure that there's any way to do what you're talking about. I can answer questions about how it is that people are entitled to be in these shopping centers and the law in that regard, how it's spelled out, and what the courts have ruled relative to the nature, the public nature, and the rights of the public to be in these shopping centers, because the land in these shopping centers is generally privately held. It'll be held by a corporation or an individual in this case, but the original property itself. But when the owner of that property opens the land up to make a shopping center out of it, their rights to their normal property, private property rights, are diminished in the exchange.
Right, it's open. It's because it's open to the public. The public has certain rights.
Well, I'm just going to grab a line out of the case because I'm sitting here looking at it. It says, "In undertaking to provide the necessities and amenities of life, the shopping center performs an important public function. Our modern society has become so interdependent and interrelated that those who perform a significant public function may not erect barriers of arbitrary discrimination in the marketplace." In other words, they open this thing up to the public. He's no longer entitled to sit there and pretend as if it's private land.
And you can't say, I retain the right to refuse service to anyone.
No. Well, it's ludicrous for him to make such a statement. And it says, to be balanced against the interest of the plaintiff's exercise of the First Amendment rights at the center is the interest of defendants in the complete prohibition of non-business-related activities. In other words, the shopping center can't tell people what they can and cannot do. And it says, the countervailing interest which the owner endeavors to vindicate emanates from the exclusive possession and enjoyment of private property. But because of the public nature of the shopping center, the impairment of the owner's interest must be largely theoretical. The owner has fully opened his property to the public. It suffers no significant harm in the deprivation of absolute power to prohibit any sort of First Amendment activity.
What's the name of this case?
It's called Diamond versus Bland. It's a California case.
Uh-huh.
And you will be. He said, "We concluded the interest of the owner lies in the shadow cast by a property right worn thin by public usage." I don't know how much more clear it can get.
Well, the trouble is, it may be clear to you and me, but the deputies seem to be operating on a different theory, and so do the local courts.
Well, it's not a matter of theory, and the local courts have not dealt with this. And the deputy's not operating on any theory. The deputy's operating on the theory, as far as she's concerned, people have no rights to be there. Their only right is to come in, take care of their business, and leave. She acknowledges no right to congregate. She acknowledges no First Amendment rights whatsoever.
This is Deputy Amy Christie?
Yeah. And she's loopy.
Well, what should the response of the citizenry be to redress this? I know Jerry took his criminal case all the way to the California Supreme Court, and I guess now he's putting it into the federal courts.
I don't know from should, man. I can't, I can't do shoulds. I object to being broke out, and I can't do them. I don't know how to do them.
I understand. Well,
but what I do,
right.
what I will do is... I will continue to exercise my First Amendment rights in areas that are open to the public. And I will continue to stand up against people then insist that those rights do not exist. And I will do it in that location or on the air at KSDO or on the street or handing out flyers or any way that I can, I mean, it's our job. It's our job to protect the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, whether or not we've sworn to it, it's still, as citizens, we have that obligation. That is more crucial than our responsibility to pay taxes, and it's more crucial than even our responsibility to sit on a jury or to vote in elections.
I agree.
These documents do not self-protect.
Right. All it requires for evil to triumph is that good people do nothing.
That's correct.
Well, what can people do if they want more information about this case? Anything you want to refer them to?
No, Diamond versus Bland is a California case. They can go up to Find Law, go to the California Supreme Court. The case number is 3-Cal-3D-653. Excuse me. No, that flu really got me.
Yeah, I
agree. Anyway.
You've got
3-Cal-3D-653. It's a 1970 case.
Okay, and this is Bland
that
versus...
It's extremely well written by Mr. Justice Mosk, and Mosk was on top of the game. This is probably the best analysis of the relationship to the public and private property interests of primarily the shopping center and the town square. Mm-hmm. It goes there more than anywhere. It talks about the right of the First Amendment, the right to the First Amendment activities. See, the theory is that if the shopping center had not sprung up, that a town would have sprung up in its place. And within that town, there would have been a town square because the community has always provided a town square. And the court recognizes that the right to the area around and the activities in the town square are fundamental, which means they can't be taken away. So the shopping center comes in and, in essence, replaces the need and therefore the fact of a town. If they don't allow for the area of the town square, they have, in essence, taken away a right to a town square, and you can't do that. You cannot take away a fundamental right. We have the right to congregate.
Yeah, but we don't want them hobos hanging around, man.
They're open to the public in all of its parts. If the bastard wants to have a goddamn apple orchard, leave it an apple orchard. But if he's going to open it up to be a town square, and he's going to get in there by permission, and he's there as a matter of permission. He got a permit to build that place. He got permission. We live as a matter of right. The citizens do. Right trumps privilege every time. So that the people have a right to be there, whether or not they're hobos. They have a right to be there. And if he doesn't want to do that, then he should simply unwind the deal, bulldoze the thing, and put an orchard back in there and go do something else. But you don't just ignore the rights of individuals because you don't want to put up with it.
Well, you know, they're not really ignoring the rights. They're simply eliminating the rights.
No, they're trouncing on them. Exactly.
We've been
they're attacking them.
We're talking with Richard Quigley, who is... How would you describe yourself, Richard?
Freedom fighter.
Freedom fighter. And you have a website people can go to? Is that one that you want to put out, or is that...
No, USFF.com. That is my website.
USFF, as in USFreedomFighter.com.
Yeah.
Richard, I'm going to let you go. You sound like, you know, you could use a little more rest, and it sounds like you never rest in some ways. So get some rest. Anything you want to conclude with here?
No, Robert, you do a fine job. You do an excellent job with what you're doing, and you know that I admire your work. And we need more like you, and we need more like Jerry Henry, and quite frankly, we probably could use a few more like me.
I'm in.
Okay.
Thanks, Richard.
All right, good night, my friend.
Good night. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. If you're up in Washington, you may be hearing us at 91.3 FM, Free Radio Olympia, or Point Arena up in California. I think it's California on the coast. Pirate Radio at 87.9 FM, or perhaps up in Seattle at 87.9 FM for Post World Radio. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 and 101.1 FM. Call-in number in case you want to get A comment or two in on what you've been hearing or what you haven't been hearing is 427-3772. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Yes.
I wish you had another line. I would have liked to ask Richard what he thought of the oxymoron or misnomer of public property and what that means. So
yeah,
if you're poor and you park in some area where it's a slum area and try to sleep for a few hours, the public servants or the public parasites, i.e. police, you know, they're banging on your door telling you you can't stay there, but it's called public property.
Well, it's just not considered part of the public, son. Unless you have a certain amount of money, you can take that van down the road, go hide somewhere else.
If I was well-to-do and I just decided to sleep in my car, they'd leave me alone?
Say that again?
Well, if I was well-to-do and I just decided to sleep in my car on public property, you know, a public street, you know, in a place where I wasn't bothering anybody, they'd leave me alone?
I doubt they'd leave you alone there either, although they'd probably give you a polite warning.
Right.
You know, I don't think they would treat you as someone who has got a necessity to sleep. And ironically, they should be treating, if you're a person who, for some capricious reason, simply wishes to sleep out, although I think there's nothing wrong with that, there would seem to be less reason, or actually more reason, for them to go after you than to go after a person who has no choice but to sleep, because that's the only place, they have to sleep someplace, and there are no other places available, although I guess... I'm not sure. What's the campground situation looking like in the winter? Any sense of that?
Well,
I know you live in
New Brighton's closed under the deal of reconstruction, which, you know, what that'll mean, probably prices will go up. I'm just assuming, right? It's kind of safe to assume. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that won't be open until May. Now, that's an arm and a leg, because it's already, you're killing a $20 bill times 30 days, which equals, you know, $600 a month rent. Plus, you got to figure in the shower coins, you know what I mean? That takes about $1.50
plus
in quarters.
Gas, yeah.
So that's a $20 bill per night.
Well, I know that you've been living in a vehicle for a number of years.
Right.
What are the chances of people in vehicles? There are a number. There must be hundreds of people in the Santa Cruz area living in vehicles. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think everybody kind of tries to hide, keep a low profile.
People don't associate with each other or try to...
Not much, I don't think.
Yeah, I know there was a time when there was a group called Homes on Wheels. The name Ed Meneses came up, I guess, a guy who tried to organize or was interested in that issue two or three years ago.
Right.
But, you know, it's a hard row to hoe, and it's a hard group to organize.
Yeah, you know, it's a terrible thing. You're trying to do the best you can. You know, you're not bothering anybody, and then the Gestapo appears, and, you know, then they come to molest you. You know, they're pulling on screen doors, you know, that are latched, and they're pulling on it. I don't know why they want to come in. You know, every property, you know, per Richard Quigley just now, that means nothing when you're homeless, because they literally just, they're trying to open side doors and get on in. The molesters are here, you know, the brown shirt molesters.
Well, I remember the case of Dennis Rehm, the man who lived in his vehicle who died recently of cancer, who actually successfully fought them in court to a standstill, but he couldn't stop the deputies from throwing him on the ground. This is a man who takes, you know, huge...
Right.
He had a whole variety of infections and cancers and before he died, and he was still mercilessly harassed and pursued by the police because he was in his vehicle. It's just, you know, it's the kind of criminal behavior that's, you know, backed by our Santa Cruz City Council, criminal behavior by the police I'm talking about, conspiracy to suppress basic civil rights and essentially to endanger life. I don't say nothing of liberty and property, but basic life of poorer people. Anything else you want to talk about, Ed?
No, other than that, you know, that picture you just painted of a person's got cancer and they're sick as a dog and they're being physically molested by molesters. I think that is absolutely sick. That's something you'd see the Gestapo doing.
Well, you'd see the Santa Cruz police doing it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, Robert. Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that every stop that a police officer does, you know, to a vehicle is that way. It's not. But the fact that this happened to Dennis Rehm, and it happened to him twice, and that he died soon thereafter, I'm not accusing the police of killing him, but they certainly didn't contribute to his well-being, towing away his vehicles, locking up his vehicles so he couldn't get at his medications, throwing him to the ground, things of this sort. It's just disgraceful, and it's disgraceful that we tolerate that kind of thing. there are some council members, like our vice mayor, who actually have more confidence in the police department than I do. Free Radio Santa Cruz recently had on the air Mike Rotkin, who's our vice mayor, probably the longest in office city council member. He was first elected in 1979, and he's been in and out since then, recycling in, recycling out, and he's back again. Well, I'm going to play you a bit of this, and I'm hoping to get a little commentary from a critical listener who may well be listening in now and who may be calling in to give us an analysis, hopefully Becky Johnson, who heard the original broadcast and was sharp enough to record it and has let me borrow her tape, may have some commentary on this. Some of you listeners may have already heard this. This happened, I think it was yesterday or the day before, on Free Radio in the morning. But I'm going to play a little bit now, and you'll get some idea of what the official response to these kinds of the criminalization of the homeless is, the criminalization of the poor. Unfortunately, I'm sure many of you have heard of it before.
Great. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a Santa Cruz City resident, and I do appreciate the quality of water, you know, that I just get out of my faucet. And hats off to whatever good leadership brought that about. But in discussing how we're going to grapple with this budget and where are we going to make the cuts, I have to ask Mr. Rotkin, the National Coalition on Homelessness released a report in August saying that it costs the cities and counties about $1,000 for every infraction ticket written to a homeless person in the officer's time, approximately 4 hours of time for that officer to process that citation. They have to appear in court. There are expenses with that. We're spending, $160 to book someone into Santa Cruz County Jail. And the people who are getting these infractions for sitting on the sidewalk, sleeping at night, how can you justify these kinds of ordinances that we have on the books and writing these citations at a tremendous cost to the city with all of these expenses down the line? And what kind of outcome of it? You're arresting a homeless person, and when they get out of jail, they have a criminal record, they have less resources, they've lost their connections with their friends and family, and some of them lose employment. A lot of people go into jail with housing and lose it when they get out. How can you justify making it illegal to sleep at night?
Thank you for that, caller. Mike?
Okay, well, first of all, the coalition they may be correct in some average that they formed. It's a ridiculously inflated figure for the city of Santa Cruz. The thing people should understand about the city of Santa Cruz, this could be a very long discussion. Becky, who is the caller, Becky Johnson, you know, and I've debated this for a long time now. First thing to say is that there is no community in the United States that simply lets people sleep out of doors. We would be the only city in, you know, a country that has something like probably 7 million, nobody knows exactly, but 7 million homeless people. It would become quite attractive, I think, if we were to say, well, this is the one town where you can come and it's okay just to sleep out of doors. On the other hand, you know, we're not interested in our police spending their majority of time running around chasing down homeless people. We have a complaint-based system in Santa Cruz. Just to give some numbers on this, last year, very few people actually are arrested or go to jail because of the camping ban, for example. Just take last month. Last month, November, we had 22 citations that were in any way related to people being homeless. Of those, over half of them had to do with other violations. They weren't arrested under the camping ban. They were arrested because they had a vehicle that was not operating properly or had broken some other law. But just to be clear, we're not trying to hide this under those different kinds of things. There were 22 people in this past month in November who basically got cited because they were sleeping outdoors somewhere. That's less than one person a day. We know that there's 15, you know, Becky would probably give a bigger number, but I would say there's at least 1,500 people sleeping in outdoors somewhere in Santa Cruz on any given night. That less than one of 1,500 people got cited. They get cited because they're sleeping in a place where they're told, you know, you have to move on, and they've been told not to come back there. We also warn people on first but nobody ever gets a citation initially. They start with a warning. So 22 people either went back to a place where they were told that there was going to be a complaint from the neighbors there not to sleep there, or in a place where someone called the police right that day that they were sleeping there. Of the people who were cited, only one person was actually arrested because they didn't have any identification, and police officers can't cite someone. You can't get someone to sign a ticket when they can't prove to you who they are.
Well, isn't that kind of police state kind of attitude? I mean, it's almost like a checkpoint. If you don't have an ID, you go to jail.
Well, I think the point is, it's a police state if you're just walking along and minding your own business and not breaking any law, and they ask, where's your proof who you are or something. Here's a situation where, just like if you're driving your car and you get stopped for speeding, and you tell the officer, he says, let me see your driver's license, and you say, I don't have a driver's license, they won't give you the ticket like most speeders would get. They'll arrest you because there's no way to give you a ticket if they don't know who you are. So it's not that they were arrested for not having an ID. They're arrested because they would have been given a citation, but they couldn't give them a citation because they wouldn't be able to demonstrate who they were. But just to be clear about the numbers here, out of maybe 1,500 people who were sleeping in the city of Santa Cruz on a given night, so multiply that number, 1,500, by 30 days of the month. I don't want to play the numbers game.
But you
end up with a relatively small number of people cited and a hugely small, very, very trivial number of people ultimately who actually got arrested for this. So the cost that Becky's talking about, the city of Santa Cruz is not spending a lot of money to enforce the camping ban. It's a relatively very small piece of our budget. We spend a lot more money providing homeless services for people, shelters,
meals, things
like that.
Are there more homeless people? Like, I think of 1,500 people sleeping outside last night. It was freezing outside last night. Are there
Actually, we don't know they're all sleeping outside. I shouldn't say that, but they're without regular home or domicile.
Okay.
Some of them may be crashing on a couch somewhere.
Or they have vehicles.
Of course, yes.
So is the city seeing a big increase? Caller, I'll get to you if you hang on. Are you seeing a big increase in homelessness with this budget crisis and the economy?
The person to give you accurate figures on that would be, probably a good guess, would be to invite Ken Cole on, who runs the Homeless Resource Center. I would be amazed if we're not seeing more homeless people, given what's happening with the economy, but I can't give you an honest answer that I've seen the statistics on what's, nobody has accurate statistics, but even sort of anecdotal or impressionistic stuff. So I would be amazed if there's not more homeless people in the city of Santa Cruz than before, but I can't be the source that can tell you I know that, because I've seen a chart somewhere or seen something happen. But I would certainly not deny that there's more homeless people.
Yeah, it
happening.
Seems like there might be. You know what? We have about 7 minutes. So caller.
Sorry.
Oh. The caller would like to call back. So what do you want the listeners to know? We got about 7 minutes left.
Well, one of the things the listeners should be aware of is that we are putting a measure on the ballot in March to try and raise a quarter-cent sales tax. Right now, the sales tax in the county is 8%. With an additional quarter-cent, it would go to 8.25% for those who live in the city of Santa Cruz, and that would be money that would go to the general fund of the city that we would be able to use. And my view is that we'll be spending this across the board on a combination of both social services, public safety and recreation, maybe those three areas mainly, because I don't think you can ask people to spend a quarter cent and then spend it on sort of internal bureaucratic needs or something.
Right. It seems it always goes back to us, like the middle class and the working class. It always goes back to us. Caller, is this a new issue?
Sort of tied to the homeless discussion that was just happening a few minutes ago, and that is earlier in the program when Michael Rotkin was first on the air, he made a comment about how city councilors make about $1,000 a month, and I was heartened to hear him admit that that's not a whole lot of money. Santa Cruz has a high percentage of service sector employees like myself who work in the restaurant industry or work in retail. These are low-income people, and it's quite amazing, in fact, that many more people aren't homeless in this town with the high costs of rent. I'm currently looking for just a stupid little bedroom to rent in the city of Santa Cruz, and I'm looking at rooms that start at $550 for a little hole in the wall. Some rooms are like $450, and you get to share it with another person who you don't even know. It's like more and more and more people in the service sector economy are going to start looking for cheaper communities to live in. Like, a lot of people have moved to Portland, Oregon because of the lower cost of rent there, and a lot of these same people are make up a good segment of the artist population in this town. And I just wonder what can be done from the council level to lower lower rents right here in Santa Cruz, and I have to go back to work, so I can't hang on the line.
Thanks for your call, Peter.
Well, certainly the caller is correct about the crisis that we face in affordable housing in our community. City Council, I think, has worked hard to try and provide affordable housing. We actually, it's an interesting figure, but at the same time, they have very, very expensive housing in this community. It's some of the highest around the, not the highest in the country, as sometimes people think, because there are certainly places that are more exclusive than Santa Cruz, but it's very expensive housing. But we also, 11% of our housing is rent-controlled because the city has contributed money to the building of the units or so, and there were state or federal programs or something, and that's the highest of any community in California, actually, at 11%. It's not enough to solve the problem because it should be 50%, you know, that would be affordable.
Right, but on the council level, what are you doing for, I imagine that there's a lot of UCSC students, oh no, they have their parent support. But
some
service,
of them, not all of them, just to be clear on
right,
that.
Right, yeah, not of all them. But the service sector is a real problem. I mean, people are can't make it.
Well, the only thing I can say, and it would be an honest answer, is back to the earlier point I had made about electoral politics, which is, you know, there's only so much the government can do given the structure of a capitalist society that we live in. I mean, it's an outrage that people are paid the levels that they are. City governments are not allowed to pass a minimum wage. It's another thing that California, in addition to not having an income tax, we're not allowed, to pass a minimum wage in at local level, because we would pass that in a second, I'm sure, on our city council. We've tried to pass rent control in our community. I've been active in several, now four actual attempts to get rent control in the city of Santa Cruz, all of which have failed, because eventually the voters will make that decision, not the city council, because anything we do can be, because of California law, can be referred to the voters in a referendum. I think rent control would be the answer to this, but you have to persuade the majority of people in town to do that, not the majority of the city council to do it. And so it's not that we are not aware of the problem or don't think something has to be done. In the meantime, all we can do is try and build as much affordable housing as we can and try and direct as much subsidy as we can into housing. We do that by putting a bigger percentage of our redevelopment money into housing than most communities do. We also try and spend as much as we can in terms of our general fund, in terms of providing subsidies. We also have an inclusionary ordinance that requires every time somebody builds a new housing project that's more than five units, they've got to provide either money to help us build affordable housing or actually make some of those units actually be affordable. It's not enough. It doesn't solve the problem, but we're doing what we can within the constraints of a capitalist society.
Great.
We can't make the unfortunately, we cannot make the people that run the service industry pay decent wages. We have no control over that. We can't pass a law that says that would be a minimum wage, and we're not allowed to do that locally.
I thought we tried. Just that caller,
we have a living wage, which affects people that contract with the city of Santa Cruz,
but not
a minimum wage that would affect people in the service sector in general.
Okay.
Again, this is an issue that needs to matter. That's why it matters who's at the state and federal level, because these people can pass minimum wages, and they should be higher than they are.
Great. Caller, you're going to be our last call.
Thanks. I wanted to thank the City Council for passing a mayor's proclamation yesterday for the Wheels of Justice that came into town talking about Iraq and Palestine and Afghanistan. And I would like to suggest that a way to possibly lower the rent around Santa Cruz would be to just stop with the police budget. I think the police budget is out of control, and that's what does not get brought up in the media. And I think that's an easy solution.
How would that lower the rent? I don't see the connection.
Well, if you stop putting so much money into the police budget, it seems like things get cut, like schools, like the civic center, like all these programs are getting cut. But what about the police budget? I see room for a cut in the police budget. And while I'm glad that the city council feels comfortable to speak out against foreign policy, I would really like to see them start speaking out against domestic policy, because we've already seen the military occupation of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine. But we're also seeing the military occupation of places like Sacramento, Oakland, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Miami. And I think it's really time to take a stand against the police budget, and I don't really want to hear any excuses for it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Just the fact, for what it's worth, we're cutting the police budget. We reduced the police department by 10 officers in the last year's budget cuts, so it's not as if they're not taking a hit along with everything else.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, or you're picking us up on freakradio.org. You're listening to Eye of the Storm. I'm Evelyn Hall. We have five more minutes with Mike Rodkin. If you want to get one more call. Oh, actually, you had something else you wanted to... I wanted to say, caller, I'll put you on hold. I wanted to thank the city council also for passing the resolution to support Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I don't know if you know that, but San Francisco did the same thing, and they got a mayor to sign on to support San Francisco Liberation Radio, and they were raided 4 weeks later, and the federal marshals came and raided them and confiscated all their equipment.
Well, it shows you that the city council has a limited ability to enforce stuff on these issues. That, I mean, we've had a very checkered relationship with the federal government. In 1985, we passed a resolution that instructed our police to not cooperate with the INS, the Immigration Service, when they made these sweeps through the neighborhoods, like in the Beach Flats, picking up Latinos. And ever since that time, the federal agencies tend not to contact the local Santa Cruz police when they come to town, whether it's drug raids through the, you know, ATF or gun stuff to the ATF, or whether it's the DES, the Drug Enforcement, DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, or in this case, I'm sure the FCC would not be calling the Santa Cruz police to help them raid the radio
Free
Santa Cruz.
Oh, that's how they do it.
So this is not local police that are involved in this stuff. They bring their own agents with their own guns, and they, frankly, they don't even, usually there's a courtesy, they inform local officers so they don't end up shooting each other. You know,
right.
They raid here, they pull their guns, or if, I don't know if it takes guns, but whatever, they make a raid, and then somebody calls up, and then the police show up to see what's going on, and there's two police agencies shooting it out with each other. So as a courtesy and a sort of safety precaution, usually they inform the local police when they're going to be in town. They've stopped doing that in the city of Santa Cruz. So
because they know you'll support.
Because basically our police are not going to provide them with the stuff that they're looking for, whether it's to enforce the Patriot Act or these
other things. Hallelujah
to
that. So, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. You know, I could say
and on
about Mike. You know, Mike, I think you're the most articulate, sophisticated liar there is, you know, on the left. However, that's for me to make the case to the people.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things I'll get you on, you know, you talk, well, you know, rent control went down, but that was over 20 years ago.
And actually, the last rent control thing I was involved in was about 3 years ago.
No.
Yeah, you know what? We only have 2 minutes, caller.
No,
I'm sorry, because Democracy Now is at noon.
A long time ago, Mike. And, you know, if you really wanted rent control, you would have, you on the last election, you would have ran for it. It would have been big. You would have been organizing. You know, you don't organize and fight for the things you say. It's just a lot of rhetoric, and especially around criminalizing poor people, you know, for the sleeping ban. You know, that's awful of you. I just want to let you know, and believe me, we're doing everything we can to take you down on that. Bye-bye.
Thank you, caller.
Well, that's Bernard Klitzman, another person I've been in many debates with about stuff. And Bernard, you know, it's you and I disagree on things, and that's fine. This is not a society where I get that my way and you don't get to say what you think. But when you've knocked on as many doors as I've knocked on and gone to as many meetings as I've gone to and talked to as many people in this community and stuff, maybe you'll have more influence. It's not fair, I don't think, and I don't want to be offensive, but it's not fair to say that all I do is talk about stuff. I go out and do political work, and I think that's what it takes. I think, unfortunately, many of the people that share your views on this issue don't spend enough time trying to educate the general public. Too much time talking to yourselves about these issues. And I would encourage you, you know, I'm not trying to tell you shut up or don't have your views. You've got to reach a bigger audience if you want to persuade the majority of people to agree with you. And I've done that work, and apparently you haven't.
Well, it sounds like a long debate going on, but you've been in politics here.
And that was Mike Rodkin appearing a day or two ago on Eye of the Storm at Evelyn Hall show. I'm going to start running through some of the misstatements and lies Rodkin has made, and when I get a call from the caller who also will be analyzing, I think Becky Johnson's been listening, we'll listen to her too. Rodkin may have knocked on a lot of doors, but Bernard Klitzner, who's an activist with Huff, has been doing educational work around these issues and talked to, I would say, thousands of people as well, perhaps in different forms than he has. And it's true that Mike Rodkin has not pushed for a vote on rent control since 1982. That was the last vote. It's true that Bob LaMonica attempted an advisory proposal, which I think Rodkin kind of encouraged him to do, but Rodkin can easily bring up a resolution at City Council. This is another lie. It does require only a majority of votes at City Council. 4 votes at City Council will pass rent control in Santa Cruz. And frankly, that could be done, of course, if someone was willing to champion it and take the risk and deal with the real estate effort agents and so forth. It doesn't require a vote of the citizenry. I mean, a vote of the citizenry is nice, but not when you have a majority on the council. It simply shows you aren't concerned about that. As for the police in San Francisco, the police cooperated with the closure of San Francisco Liberation Radio. Vinny gave us an update on this at the last edition of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. In spite of their rather weak resolution, the San Francisco resolution, which said, you know, don't help. Santa Cruz specifically exempted that from its resolution, so that there is no provision that the police don't cooperate with the federal authorities. And obviously there could be, because as Rotkin himself admits, there's apparently a practice of directing the police not to cooperate with the INS. Yet Rotkin and Kennedy will not support a resolution instructing the police not to cooperate on the Patriot Act. That's the law that criminalizes people under these, you know, vastly expanded definitions of domestic terrorists, because they don't want to offend the police department. Rotkin claims 10 officers are being let go from the police department as a cut in the budget. I don't know about that, but I do know that when SCAN attempted to have the police budget cut proportionately with all the other departments, that was opposed by Rotkin and others. Social Services takes bigger cuts than the police department and did in the last round of the budget cuts. And that is, in fact, my understanding of what happened this summer. There have been more sort of, you know, behind closed doors dealings around two budget committees that were secret and held back from the community. But the fact of the matter is, again, we're hearing misstatements on the budget. City contractors, he supports city contractors, and, you know, well, why? What about the scab labor the city is supporting at Cathcart and Pacific? Inclusionary housing, I think if you talk to Housing Now and people who've been involved with housing, you'll find that that's kind of a joke. Kind of looking at my notes, a little hard to read here. San Francisco did pass a minimum wage. That was one of the accomplishments of Gonzalez, one of the supervisors, as I understand it. I could be wrong about that, but that was, I think, one of the things he did in the last year that he was proud of. That's the losing candidate, president of the Board of Supervisors, ran against Gavin Newsom recently. 11% of the housing in Santa Cruz is rent-controlled. New to me, glad to hear it. However, in Berkeley, I'm sure it's over 50% is rent-controlled. So this is not the city with the largest percentage. There are cities that actually have rent-controlled. Santa Monica, Berkeley, I believe Cotati. Other cities do have rent-control. They do. Unfortunately, also have vacancy decontrol, which means when you move out of a house, they can raise the rent. But at least there's some protection if you stay in the house, and they probably have eviction protection as well, which Rotkin has not come out for, has not introduced anything into city council about. We have a incoming caller. Hi there, caller.
That's funny. You've got a whole bunch of things that I didn't notice, and I have a completely another list for having this and dissecting the Rotkin here.
Oh, why don't you run through your list, and then I'll finish off my list.
Yeah, that'd be good. He said that when I said that it was $1,000 for each citation issued, he said that was a ridiculously inflated figure for the city of Santa Cruz. I don't think first off, I would ask him, well, what is the figure for the city of Santa Cruz? How much does it cost for a citation when you go all the way through the system of the outcome of that particular citation? I think you'd find that the city of Santa Cruz is not all that different from other cities in the way that they tabulate this. And so I'd challenge him to prove it. He says there's no community in the U.S. that allows homeless people to sleep outside at night. Well, we also know from that same study from the National Coalition on Homelessness that only 28% of the cities surveyed actually outlaw sleep. So,
Rotkin might say that, you know, well, like in Carmel, they don't outlaw sleep, but they'll beat you up and run you out of town or something. I don't know if they beat you up, but they'll treat you more roughly than the Santa Cruz and police. And the Santa Cruz sleeping ban is simply a set of guidelines to the police that requires them to act within the law to deny you your right to sleep. But in fact, there are communities that the police are required to stay away from homeless people if they don't have a shelter.
Okay, but that doesn't address the argument that the middle class person is interested in. And am I getting my dollar's worth for my tax dollars?
Right. What I'm saying, though, is that Rotkin's argument that there is no community that allows people to sleep in the United States is simply false. Miami is such a community,
right,
under court order by federal courts. I believe Austin, Texas is another community where the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance were thrown out. Portland, Oregon, the camping ordinance was thrown out. Rotkin is wrong. He's been informed of his wrongness, mm-hmm, but he says
Eugene, Oregon liberalized their thing, and they didn't have a huge migration. He was saying 7 million homeless people in the United States would find would find Santa Cruz very inviting if we made sleeping illegal.
This is a myth that you and I know Becky was demolished not merely by homeless advocacy groups, national ones like the National Coalition for the Homeless, not only by our local HUF, but the Homeless Issues Task Force and the City Council Subcommittee on, I guess it's called camping, back in 1998-99.
The camping ordinance with Catherine Byers and
Rotkin and Sugar and Prone. Yeah, they found that there was no magnet effect either. In other words, Rotkin is promulgating this kind of anti-homeless mythology that Newsom, now mayor of San Francisco, will no doubt be using. The two of them should get together. Maybe they can all, I don't know.
I keep asking Mike to come up with some, show me a single example where it ever happened, where a city in the United States liberalized an anti-homeless law and they got inundated with 7 million people or even a substantial increase. He needs to show us where that's happened. From what I know about migration patterns is that homeless people migrate for the same reasons that people in houses migrate. They go to places where they have jobs, job opportunities, or where they have friends or family who can provide a network of support. Moving on, he says very few people are arrested or go to jail. I don't know. That's not my experience. I see homeless people arrested and going to jail with a scary, drudging regularity.
Well, he is citing the 22 cases in November that the police chief cited.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, too. The 22 citations for 1 month, which he was saying, well, that's less than one person a day cited. Well, first off, it's 22 citations issued in 1 month. We know that for every citation issued, the police move along someone about 10 times, that they really don't issue citations very much. So that'd be like 220 contacts with police in the course of 1 month. Multiply that times 12 for a year, that's 2,640 contacts with police per year against homeless people, and he himself said there are 1,500 homeless people.
Have your ID ready. I mean, that was, I think, a good point that Evelyn made. Was it Eve? I'm not sure. What's her name?
I left you the note.
Evelyn Hall, yeah. She pointed out, what do we got, checkpoints here? We said, well, speeders need to have ID or they'll be arrested.
Yeah, he switched over into traffic law.
Yeah, let me point this out, though, that, yeah, if you're speeding, it's one thing, but if you're sleeping, I mean, you can choose to speed or not to speed, but can you choose to sleep or not to sleep within a period of 7 days? That's one thing. And then another thing is, it's also true that police do not need to arrest you based on no ID. They can take your word for it as to who you are. They're not required to arrest you. That's discretionary. When they do that to a homeless person, some authorities, as I mentioned, Miami and the Pottinger decision, have ruled that an abuse of police authority and the basis for a $1.5 million lawsuit. Go ahead with more stuff if you've got it.
Yeah. Let's see. He said that only people are cited only on complaint. That's a lie. All of the Parks and Rec citations are done without a minus a complaint, and more Parks and Rec citations are issued than Santa Cruz Police Department tickets. Also, as far as on complaint, Chief Belcher admitted at a council meeting that there are six different areas that they regularly patrol and issue citations for absent a complaint, and he would not reveal where those six areas were.
And also, the basic point here is that there is no legal place for the overwhelming majority of people who are outside to legally sleep at all.
He says, well, they're only arresting people who are sleeping in a place where they've been told not to sleep or have been told to move on.
But they've been told not to sleep everywhere.
Right.
That's the point. And since they've been told not to sleep everywhere, this creates an incredible situation of insecurity for people who have to hide. They can't sleep safely. They can't sleep in well-lighted areas. The Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, as I endlessly repeat, passed in 1998 a resolution against the sleeping ban for the very reason that women cannot sleep together in safer areas. They can't use police services. Stuff that Rotkin pays no attention to whatsoever.
He says that we're not spending a lot on the camping ordinance. We're spending a lot more money providing for shelters and services for homeless people. Well, let's look at the numbers. We're spending about $1.5 million per year for the Homeless Services Center, which is a whole complex of the majority of homeless services in the city of Santa Cruz, versus about $15 million for the Santa Cruz Police Department budget. I don't know what percentage of that is for homeless people, but I can assure you it's a much higher percentage than occurs in the regular population.
Becky, I'm going to have to give you, have to ask you to sum up very quickly because I've got a quick call to make and I've got some information to give out. I've only got 10 minutes to do it in.
So. Okay. Rodkin is, he should know better. He's really repeating a lot of things that he's been saying for years, and the facts have come out since, and he's just insisting on it. And he didn't answer my question about, is it worth it to spend this money?
He trusts his police department. Hey, thank you, Becky, and we'll be carrying this on.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And I'm going to try now to do a quick contact with Jane Kaiser. And Jane has been active in the Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective for some time, and hopefully we'll be able to get through to her here in these closing minutes of Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Looks like, however, I didn't get a dial tone, so I'm going to try again. Hang with me. Let's see if we can actually, I think we got, may have a ring here, hopefully. Yep. And we got a phone ringing, maybe we'll get somebody answering. It's a little bit late in the game. Jane's been working on this for many years, and she's got a display in the library, as I mentioned, showing psychiatric abuses, and we've got some cases of folks coming
Hello,
up.
Hello, this is Jane. Please
but it looks like
message.
We have missed her. Well, maybe not. Jane, are you there? Free Radio is calling in. It looks like she's not. If you want information, though, about the cases coming up of Leela Percival, and I believe there's a couple of other cases that she's following. I think Melanie also comes up on Monday, and Leela comes up on Tuesday. Interesting jury trial of a conservatorship hearing on Tuesday for Leela Percival. Give a call to 475-7904. 475-7904. I also had an interesting chat with Sally Zinman, who works with the, I guess it's the California Network of Mental Health Clients, and she did an interesting interview with us on the on AB 1421. That's the Needles on Wheels bill that makes it easier to commit people who've already been incarcerated or require them to take medication when they leave the hospital, and if they don't, they get essentially dragged in again forcibly, or people come to their door with needles. Apparently, Gavin Newsom, the new mayor, as supervisor, wanted that program instituted in San Francisco and will be probably pushing for it as mayor. The Mayor's Commission on Disability was discussing the issue, and that will be coming up in December. We're hoping to get a whole kind of a broader perspective from Sally when we have her on the air. AB 34, a bill she favors, is being pressed, which allows for all kinds of self-help services for homeless people, voluntary community-based services that don't just include medication, but drug and alcohol support, housing, jobs, income, and so forth, dealing with real-life issues. This apparently, they're considering expanding this to other groups, which is a great idea. Assemblyperson Steinberg is carrying that. It's coming from the Mental Health Association of California and a bunch of nonprofit and community-based organizations. And there was a recent a forum on that, and we can have her. Hopefully, she'll be talking more about that as when we can actually get an interview with her, which will be fairly soon. There are two cases coming up tomorrow. Maybe I can even get a quick response here from one of the victims. That's the Steve Argue Move Along case. We'll see if we can actually get Steve on the line here. Again, I have a little phone's a little laggard here, and maybe we're going to have to dial again. I have a case coming up tomorrow where I'm accused of jaywalking on Pacific Avenue, but that's going to be continued, so there won't really be much happening around that case, and I will, in fact, be out of town. And we're ringing Steve and seeing if we can get a response on how things are going to be going tomorrow in his case. I think he also has a continuance. This is at 10 o'clock in Department 2.
Hello.
Steve Argue?
Hello.
Hi, this is Free Radio calling you for a brief statement on what's happening tomorrow in your move-along case.
in the First Amendment case.
Yes.
I've been trying to get a hold of my attorney, and I haven't gotten a hold of him, so I don't really know anything new except for that I'm going to court on tomorrow at 10 in courtroom 2, and we filed various things, including the argument that this law itself is a violation of the First Amendment freedom of speech. That First Amendment activity should not or cannot be reduced to only 1 hour activity, as the city law does.
Steve, do we know what kind of a hearing this is, or is it sort of, I mean, is it something that you invite people to come to, or is it going to be of interest, or would you suggest they wait for the more sexy kind of deal?
Well, I don't know if any of this is really sexy. I mean, courtrooms suck. Capitalist courtrooms suck. Courtrooms in America suck. People who want to come down and support me, I would encourage people to come tomorrow. I don't know what's happening exactly tomorrow, except, hopefully the city attorney, who's an employee of the local city government, local city council that is supposed to be progressive, will drop the charges tomorrow. But so far, she hasn't done so.
I wish you luck, Steve. I'm going to be out of town, and I hope things go well. Thanks for giving us a very brief update. I've got to roll because I've got 3 minutes left.
Okay, so some people were planning on coming down tomorrow, right? I had heard.
The street performers are having a little trouble safe. The Street Performers Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression did meet last night. There weren't very many of us, and so I don't know quite who's going to show up or what's going to happen. I know that a lot of people who would show up are either out of town or under the weather, but please keep us advised, and at any next thing, there will be some people showing up.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And they're also, Huff met on Wednesday, meets every Wednesday, 8:30, Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street, in case you want to come on down. We decided we were going to have two events. One is going to be 1 o'clock, the same day that they do the reading of the homeless deaths, which will be on the 22nd of December. It's going to be a march from the town clock up Pacific Avenue, and there'll be some hot cider served at the end if we can talk our cider provider into it. We're inviting musicians to come. Street performers, I think, will be involved in this, at least some of them. And we're going to be doing some Christmas caroling, doing a little alternate Christmas caroling for those who want to hear some real Christmas carols about the kind of reality Christmas carols. And then on first night, while most people are being dragged indoors to pay expensive first night badge prices, Huff is going to sponsor an outdoor event where we will be, again, doing some street performing and trying to get people involved, again, with an awareness of what's really going on in Santa Cruz and support for some kind of meaningful change around the sleeping ban, maybe a campground, something that does something that helps mobilize the energies of people who are outside, isolated, and need to come together and stand up for each other, and others in the community also want to stand up for them. And that's just about it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to play a little music from Mike True. Actually, we had a kind of a protest contingent at the Mayor's Parade, the Mayor's Christmas Parade, on last Thursday, I guess it was, a week ago, where the Mayor, and Mark Premack and Cynthia Matthews were all kind of waving on top of their fire engine as they rode down the street. And we stood along with them with our signs and the sleeping ban. There's a little description of events and some sort of dialogue on the Indie Media website. If you want to go to that Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And Mike True did some guitar strumming as we remembered Jimmy Klein Jr., the man who... Dan White said he didn't freeze to death. That's what Sentinel writer Dan White says. On the other hand, the coroner says that his death was at least partially due to exposure. So you can make up your own decision about that. I hope in the next show I play to be able to give you a testimonial to Jimmy that came from Slim Cal, the guitarist, who does a great slide guitar. He's is a friend of Jimmy's, and he'll be talking about him. I'm not going to be here on Sunday with a live show. I'm going to be out of town, but I'll be playing an old show for those who want to get a little nostalgic, assuming that I can get that thing queued up and get the folks, get somebody down here to play it. Again, if you want to reach me off times, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call, and I will try to respond to all calls. I'm going to be out of town, as I said, for the next few days, but I'll try and check in on what's going on. And in the meantime, again, as Richard Quigley said, it's you out there that keeps the Bill of Rights alive. You know, Wednesday was Bill of Rights Day. Bill of Rights Defense Committee decided apparently to do nothing as far as any march goes, but I think they got one coming up on Sunday. It's going to start at the town clock, a day of events, followed by a march and then a fundraising event, and I wish them well with that event. I only wish that they had, you know, also taken on local civil rights as their venue and call to account local politicians like Kennedy and Rotkin and Riley, who refuse to support local civil rights struggles but like to wear the mantle of the progressive veneer that they are, in fact, you know, wearing the thin veneer of progressivism they use to get elected without the substance, which is unfortunately what we got in Santa Cruz. Anyway, let's hear Mike True doing some strumming in the parade, the song Sleepin'.
So I wanted to thank you.
Assuming we get the right tape here. Don't go away. It is here somewhere. But I'll just... Here we go.
Some folks get to sleep in king-size beds, silk sheets and Loctite doors. Some sleep in a room with no mattress, five or six on the floor.
That's right.
But when the policeman says, hey, you can't sleep there, you don't get to sleep no more.
That's right.
But I say sleeping, close your eyes and go down the street. Sleep, sleeping. Don't you know life when she does stuff? Sweet, sweet dreams. They put your worries on the bed. Go back to sleeping. Sleepyhead and all. When too much be going on, I get no sleep sometimes.
That's right.
Just like I'm losing control. I'm losing sleep, that's why. If you're bound too tight, you got to make yourself unwise. I'm just sleeping. Close your eyes, go down. Sleep, sleep, don't you lie, I see the sweet, sweet dream. Put your worries on the bed, go back to sleep.
All right, here we go now.
Say, there ain't nothing wrong with it. I say, sleeping is no crime. It heals the body, soul, and mind. Yes, it does.
That's right.
Don't let nobody tell you how. Don't let nobody tell you when. You just got to sleep when that sleep sets in. That's right, sleeper. Close your eyes and go down the street. Sleep, sleeper. Don't you know lies? You just a sweet, sweet dream. They put your worries on the bed, go back to sleepin', sleepyhead. That's right. I just sleepin'.